It's Song Talk Radio with Michael, Neil, Phil, and the gang.
Greetings, all Song Talkarians. Welcome back to the show, everyone. Great to see you today. This is the show where we share tips and tricks on writing better songs. The goal, of course, is hopefully at the end of the show, we will all learn three new things that help us write better songs. And who do I see with me today? Mr. Michael Proudfoot. How you doing, Michael?
I'm doing quite well, thank you. Quite excited about tonight's show. It'll be fun. Good to talk about a genre of music that we don't often talk about, so that's pretty exciting.
One of my favorites, which is good. And of course, Mr. Neil is still on assignment, and hopefully he'll be back soon.
Is he in Glasgow covering the climate change conference?
Yes, he is. You know, he's okay. He's doing the press conferences and, doing the stuff.
Hopefully you'll get a one-on-one with Biden and talk a bit songwriting with the president of the United States.
Well, that's true.
He has that talent.
He does. I'm Phil Emery, for those of you wondering. While we are song talking or after the show or pretty well any time, day or night, why don't you send us questions or comments or your insights to feedback@songtalk.ca. We'll try to best to respond to them and share them with the listeners. And if you happen to be watching us on YouTube, click on like and or subscribe buttons, because that helps YouTube recommend our show to other folks who like things about songs. And that would be...
It helps make the world a better place in general.
Yeah, it does. And I'm very excited because I've heard that one of my favorite bands, Kraftwerk, is coming to Toronto.
That's right. They're doing a 50th anniversary tour, though I can't believe they've been at it for 50 years. They're coming to Toronto on June 6th. And let me see... I guess because most of our listeners are in the States, I really should be giving out the American dates. But you don't care about that, do you, Phil? You just care about where you can see Kraftwerk.
I just care about me.
Exactly. Oh, they're playing Red Rocks. That's be cool. Red Rocks in Colorado in June 30th. Anyway, yeah, you can go online and find out more about where they're playing. But anyway, Kraftwerk are touring.
Yes, very impressive. They're definitely getting out there. One of my musical heroes, Florian Schneider, passed away. I was very sad about that. He was one of the founders. Mm-hmm. And I was very fortunate to see them when I was in high school in the 80s. And that was an amazing show. And back then, they actually played electronic percussion by hand. So they had some rhythm machines, but actually a lot of it was done actually by hand, which was one of the reasons why they were so funky.
Right. Because they could slip time and swing and...
Yeah, they were really funky.
The beat and, oh, cool.
So, very excited.
Well, that was going to be my news, so I guess that's it. We can just get on with the show.
That's right.
Who do we have tonight, Phil?
Well, today we have D.O. Gibson. He is a Guinness World Record-setting rapper, author, professional speaker, and music executive. He set a Guinness World Record for the longest freestyle rap ever. 8 hours and 45 minutes. I don't want to do anything for 8 hours. Gibson has coordinated tours for himself and his artists in Asia, Taiwan, Japan, Singapore, Europe, England, France, and the Netherlands, USA, New York City, Miami, and Los Angeles, as well as in his native country, Canada. He is the co-founder of the Northern Power Summit, an urban conference based here in Toronto. In 2021, it celebrated its 5th year anniversary with a 3-part virtual series that concluded in March and included Tom McDonald, Maestro Fresh West, and Classified, amongst others. As a professional speaker, he has spoken at over 2,500 schools through his STAY-driven program, including at the world-renowned Harvard University. In February 2021, he kicked off a 90-show virtual tour, Black Canadian 365, focused on Black Canadian history. And let's hear a bit of his song now.
Can't stop. Won't stop. Can't nobody hold me down. Cause we stay driven. Whoa. Cause we stay winning.
Gibson, thank you so much for being on the show.
Welcome.
Thank you guys for having me.
So what is your songwriting process like? Do you start off with your lyrics, or you just start off with a beat, or what is your process?
I got to start with the beat. It all comes from the beat. And I mean, even for this song, I remember when I reached out to the producer, I'd never worked with Nook Lewis before. He comes from the same area as my grandparents. So he comes from Cape Breton, Nova Scotia, a little place called Sydney, Nova Scotia, and a little neighborhood called Whitney Pier. And sometimes when you reach out to producers, they say, what are you looking for? You know what I say, guys? I say, I'm looking for a D.O. beat produced by Nook Lewis. I want to hear what you, I don't want to say the trends. I don't want to say, I want it to sound like Kanye or Drake. And so he sent me only one beat. And when I heard the beat, I was like, I don't know. But he was like, you know what? I heard some of your other stuff. And I said, I'm going to just send you this one beat. And when I hear the beat, I just like to go into it and try some different melodies out on it. And then when, to me, it starts when I have the concept. To me, the concept is the key with any song. Mm. And then when I have the concept, then I can go into the hook. And then when I have the hook, then I can go into the lyrics.
You start off with the concept before the hook.
Yeah, you got to have the concept. You know what you get. I mean, sometimes you might just strike gold and have a great hook. Mm. But like, I think thematically, I always like to have my songs with a good theme. So I like the concept.
So is that pretty well the way you write all your material, start in that way? Or are you open to it coming from different directions?
I'm open to it coming from different directions, but I think the young rapper in me is when I heard a beat, I just wanted to eat the beat. Meaning like, I just wanted to kill the beat. I just want to have the greatest lyrics and write the meanest rap. And I think as I grew as a songwriter, I realized it's not so much about having the greatest 16 bars or having the greatest verse. It's about bringing it all together. And so I think as I grew as a songwriter, my songwriting partner, Slack of the Beat Child, taught me that. He's like, I start with the concept, man. You got to start with the concept. And I feel when I started doing that, my songs just got better.
Now, you've been doing this for a while, right? Who are your influences or who inspired you when you were starting out?
Well, I got to say, I've got a few different influences. So the first rapper that really inspired me was Fresh Prince, Will Smith. My dad took me to a concert. I was 12 years old. My dad took me to Mississauga, Ontario, and I got to see Fresh Prince before he did the TV show, before he was Will Smith.
Oh, really?
And yeah, and when I saw him perform, I remember just as a kid, underage club, like it was all ages, but I just remember sitting in the middle of the audience and being like, wow, like to control the microphone like that, I was in awe. So he was a big influence. And then I got into LL Cool J. And as I progressed, I think lyrically wise, it was Nas. When Nas came out with Illmatic back in 1994, that's when I realized, wow, like what you can do with words and the way he was using words and the double entendres and the way he was just flipping different flows. It just kind of blew my mind. So I think those are my foundation of hip hop. And of course, right after that, Biggie would come out and I learned so much from him. And I always like to think that your influences, when you combine them, can create something new. So I never wanted to take from just one artist, but I grew so much from so many different ones.
I wanted to ask about, you know, something about rap and, you know, the rap that I fell in love with was the really early stuff, which was very, you know, turntable, very sample based. And, you know, I've often talked about my love of, you know, Public Enemy, Fight the Power, which is a masterpiece. And he actually went out to make a masterpiece. I mean, it wasn't just sort of something they came up with. He wanted to do a Sgt. Pepper of rap, and, you know, they worked really hard on that, which is why. So
how mature he was. He was mature at the time, and he was older, mm-hmm. and he understood the gravity of what he was doing. And I will always, like, I mean, Chuck D and Public Enemy are huge influences on me. So thank you for saying that. Sorry to cut you off. Yeah. I just wanted to say that.
But, you know, I love the sampling. I love the taking various bits of media and recontextualizing them and layering them. And, you know, the fact that even in Fight the Power, you have all these different levels of meaning. You have like the, you know, the Bob Marley sample about I shot the sheriff, which is about, you know, injustice and all this stuff, which is layered. Are you doing much sampling now, or is it mostly fresh, new, original beats?
It's mostly fresh and original. I've still love sampling. I think that as musicians and practical wise, it got into a point where if I want to license the song, it's better if it's original. And so I love sample beats, and I like how you say Public Enemy, because the layers of samples and the little clips in here and there. But I do mostly original stuff now, primarily for that reason, to license it. And because sample clearance it's still tricky, and you don't want to get caught on anything, and if the song blows up so I've for my last few albums I've really stayed away from samples.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard that. It's a shame, because it's something I truly love, but I do understand that, you know, as you say, once it becomes very famous, then everyone's going to come out for you, so.
Right. But at the same time, like I sampled a really popular song. I did a record called Don't Stop Believing, sampled Journey, because I grew up around in Sarnia, Ontario, which is near Detroit. And so, you know, that famous line that they say from South Detroit, which doesn't really exist, but right, like, there's no South Detroit.
That's Windsor, isn't it? South Detroit.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying, right? But so we did pay for the sample clearance on that record. And that was cool. And cause that was like a blatant sample, you know? Yeah. And I'm glad, and I believe in doing things the right way, but I just think it's easier now to do original music. And I think with the way hip hop's going, I got to really shout out Kanye West, in the sense that he came from that sample background, but he started really creating his own music. And you know, others like Drake and the contemporaries started doing it like that. And I think that's really cool too. I mean, except for when Drake started sampling, lyric wise, I'm So Sexy. I can't believe that he was doing Right Said Fred.
I know.
Who would have ever thought?
Yeah. So a lot of the artists you just mentioned have really good collaborations with producers, with Drake and Noah Shabib and Kanye with like Rick Rubin and other people.
Yep.
How do you work with producers, or do you collaborate much with other artists?
I collaborate with a lot of producers, and to me, it's about having a personal relationship with producers as well. So, just a couple of weeks ago, I was in Amsterdam, and I was working with Meyer Clarity, and I've collaborated with Meyer in the past. We've done songs together, but the cool thing was being there with him and spending those times on the road. I think when we do another song, it's just going to add another layer to it. So it's fine to get a beat sent to you on the internet. And so many rappers nowadays, I don't know if you guys are familiar with this, but there's different beat sites that rappers will go to and lease a beat or buy a beat. And that's cool. I've even done that, but it's great when you have that personal relationship.
Yeah, you can get it crafted, and yeah, I understand. It's going to work much better for you, and it's going to fit with the way you flow and how you write.
Yeah.
Rather than you having to bend over backwards to make something work just because it was a cool beat.
Yeah, precisely.
So when you're writing, are you generating like tons and tons and tons of verses and then reducing them down, or is it pretty sort of one off, or?
It comes both ways. Sometimes, I mean, as a freestyler, I like to freestyle. So I like to just put on a beat and just let my mind go wherever it's going to take me. But I think there's something to be said about that first line. And when I get that first line, whether it's a melody of da 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 da, and then finding the words to it, or just having that first line, when I get that first line, then I say, okay, let's go. because I think with any song, it is about those first lines and first mm-hmm. bars. I think Prodigy from Mobb Deep, he was the best in hip hop to me. I put my lifeline in between people's lives. You know, he had the best first lines, and you don't want to overthink it. You want it to come as natural as possible. But to me, it's when I get that first line, I can go. And I do like to overwrite. So even if it's a 16 bar verse, I might write 30 bars. I might write 32. I might write 48. And then chopping it up and making sure that it's cohesive. I'm just a big fan of cohesion, that you want to tell a story, and you want to make sure you're given all the goods and no filler. And but then for me, my best friend MT, he always says, Dio, it's all about your second verse, because I think the second verse, for me at least, is when I get really comfortable with the beat, and you just, that's when I start getting in the pocket. And it doesn't matter what genre of music, you know, when the rapper gets in the pocket, that's what you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm curious, because you talk about freestyling and you mm-hmm. are the world record holder of freestyling.
Yeah, you do
that. But you're also, you talk about having a concept and planning it out. Is that at odds, or how do the two work together of being, you know, freestyle and open to what's in your mind, just spur of the moment, but also planning and being very, you know, cautious or careful and editing lyrics?
Yeah. I love that question.
How do exist together?
Because I think any freestyler has a background of thinking ahead. And I guess my only comparison is like a stand-up comedian. And so a stand-up comedian, when they go to do comedy and they might see some people in the front row, and even though they're talking and doing their act, they're still thinking about those people in the front row. And if somebody heckles me or says something, I'm going to know what to say because I'm watching your mannerisms. I'm watching this and that. I think freestyling is about being observant. I was never a battle rapper because I didn't like insulting people. My favorite thing about freestyling was being at a high school party and talking to everybody at the party. And then they get me to freestyle. And then I'm all of a sudden rapping about everything that we talked about. And I remember just people's mouths dropping, saying like, he was just, this is the conversation we just had. And so I never looked at it as that conflict. But at the same time, the challenge of a freestyler is to get those words, to get those topics, and to just make magic happen on the spot. Like even today, I was at a school and these kids gave me three topics and they wanted me to rap about COVID. Well, that's an easy one. You know, yeah, you can go on and on about that. But one teenage kid, and he was a little rougher kid, said unicorn. And so any,
is he trying
any
to mess
rap
with you?
That I might have had, yeah, like that, like a 7-year-old girl from Barrie would say unicorn. I was like, no, I'm going to have to switch it and do it in a way for a kid from Rexdale, a 17-year-old black kid. And so you have to know your spots, but you know, you come with that basis, but you're always thinking ahead.
I'm as someone who takes forever to write lyrics. I mean, I'm really slow. I'm always amazed at how you can do freestyling. So if someone wants, if a songwriter wants to kind of write more lyrics, like, do you have suggestions on how to start?
Yeah, when I was in grade 12, well, OAC, actually, if you guys remember OAC, kind of grade 13, right? I had a class called Writer's Craft, and it's a story that I tell when I go to school sometimes, because I remember this class that he said, we're going to do a test every day. First 10 minutes of class, I want you guys to open your books, and you're either going to pass the test or you're going to fail. As soon as I say start, I want you to write. I'm going to walk down the aisle. If I see you stop moving your pen, I'm just going to put a mark on the paper. That means you failed a test. And I remember doing that exercise day after day for that semester and just getting into that free flow, freestyle writing helped get me through that writer's block and that anxiety. Because yes, I'm a freestyler, but yeah, there's times where I don't know what I'm going to write. I remember being in Nova Scotia. I did an album with Classified and, you know, really popular rapper. And I'm at a studio and I remember he played me some beats that night and I had to go back to my hotel room and I had to write the song to record it the next day. And I didn't know what I was going to write about, guys. It just wasn't coming to me. And I did that, that, you know, experiment or that practice. And it, as much as I was writing, it just wasn't coming. But I think as a professional, what I've learned to do is even when I don't know what I'm doing, to focus on the solution and to keep on writing because I know the song will write itself.
So, I guess it's
does that make
done
sense?
It enough that yeah, you've done it enough that you've got muscle memory of a kind.
Right, yeah, muscle memory. Precisely.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's well, it's I know in my process, often when I'm starting a song, I have lots of ideas and I'm very stupid for not writing those down. Because then I come back to it like, you know, 2 weeks later and you know, it's really just like pulling teeth. I mean, I do do it eventually, but it takes me forever. I mean
sure.
You know, like you would probably die. You just look at it, just going like, "What's wrong with you?"
Oh, and but that's I love voice memos. So I have voice memos. I use Evernote. I take notes. I just write things down. I have spreadsheets of ideas or lines and concepts. And so if I'm stuck, I go back to those. And sometimes I go back to my old songbooks, and I'll just open up a page and I'll read some of the things I wrote, which are now like 22 years ago. And sometimes just that process I find will spark something. But to me, it's just about getting stuff down on the paper and not using that critical lens, because I think we all use that critical lens. And when you do that too much, you stifle yourself.
You said something earlier that I thought was interesting when you're talking about your process. You talked about the melody.
Mm.
And you know, a lot of people think rap, it's just words and declaiming and what, but melody is really important. Yeah. Even if it finds its way into just into how you say the words. Can you talk a bit about how important and how you work with melody?
Yeah, I think I learned that from Method Man from the Wu-Tang Clan. And what I loved about hearing about his writing process was he'll go in the studio, he'll hear a beat and he'll just go, da-na-na-na-na-na. And he'll get that take and then he'll play that back again and again. And it's not just a conventional melody as far as like a normal song, like a singer would do, but it is the cadence and it's that rhythm. And I guess for me, when I started making professional music and people heard my music, they were like, it's not like how when you freestyle. Because when I was thinking and overthinking it, I wasn't having that same vibe. I didn't have that same energy. So I think it was really important for me, and that's what I've always kept with me as a songwriter, is to get that vibe. And sometimes it comes by that cadence, or sometimes it can come with that melody. And I'm not a great singer by any means, but like that song we were playing, Still Driven, I just had that melody in my mind. And then I said, still driven. And then I was like, okay, we got it. I'm still driven. And then I took it from there. But having the melody, I think, is really key.
And well, let's talk a bit. I'd like to play the song, but let's talk a little bit about the how it all came together. How what was the writing process and then the production? How did the song come together?
Nook Lewis sent me the beat and he said, this is the one. And I heard it again. And then I was just freestyling. And when I started getting that melody in my head for the chorus, that was the first part. So I got the melody and then I just started saying Still Driven. And then I was like, oh, because my first professional recording was Stay Driven. And that came out 20 years ago. So then I just said to myself, what are all the things that go into be still driven? Staying on this hustle, working overtime, defying the odds. That's what DO stands for, is defy the odds. Mm-hmm. I'm on this grind. That's the name of my book. We still driven. And then once I got the chorus down, I didn't want to over rap it, meaning I didn't want to have too much just rapping. I didn't want it to be a rappity rap song. So the first bars, I say, I used to come home and watch Much. It was all a dream. So I'm giving a reference to Notorious B.I.G. Juicy. And he says, it was all a dream. But I used to come home and watch Much music. I used to dream about being a rapper. It was all a dream. These are the days of double XL and oversized jeans. And so I'm trying to use a double entendre because I'm saying, back when I was growing up, everybody was wearing really big clothing, double XL, oversized jeans. But I'm also giving a nod to double XL magazine. And I was in double XL magazine, and that was the biggest magazine at the time. But then I say, at first, there were so few that had success because Canadian rappers didn't do well.
No.
I looked up Fresh Prince and Maestro Fresh West. So again, just a nod to the people that put me down that road. And so I just wanted to, I wanted to give my 90s references, but to give it in a modern day flow. And so that people that grew up in the same time that I did could relate to it. But if you just came up right now, you could still just get down because I'm rapping in a modern day flow.
Awesome. Let's take a listen and then we'll talk a bit more.
Oh, yeah.
Can't stop. Won't stop. Can't nobody hold me down. Cause we stay driven. Whoa. Cause we stay winning. Yeah. Staying on a hustle, working overtime. Define the eyes, staying on this grind. We stay driven. I used to come home and watch Much. It was all a dream. These were the days of double XL and oversized jeans. Back then there were so few that had success. I looked up to Fresh Prince and Maestro Fresh West. Now it's been 20 years. Don't make a mistake. Since October 78, I was Drake before Drake, paving the way. Some days felt like a full-time job. Kept my money on my mind like I'm Snoop Doggy Dogg. Of course I had critics. Are they selling this wolf tickets? I rolled it, pivot, flipped it. Can you dig it? Now we gonna live it up like it's New Year's. On my Macho Man Randy Savage. Ooh, yeah.
Still driven. Yeah.
Cause we still winning.
Yeah.
Oh. Staying on a hustle, working overtime. Define the eyes, staying on this grind. We still driven. Yeah, we still driven.
Go ahead, throw up the W like Wu-Tang Clan. Ain't nobody rock a party like Dwayne can. Yeah, put me at the function and watch me network. I be at it, it's a habit, we been putting in work. See, it was never easy, I had to deal with the greasy. Now you see D-O-G-Z smiling up on your TV. Believe me when I say we didn't do it for clout. Took two L's, came back, mama said knock you out. Stick and move, hit him with that 012. Northern hospitality whenever we come through. Can't nobody tell me no, where I dream is where I go. Stay afloat, probably find me somewhere in a boat.
He said, dreaming.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. The first verse is almost like narration, and then the second verse is a bit, you play around a bit more with the flow and the rhythm.
Yeah, yeah, you see that? Well, it's because it's Nova Scotia too, and I when it came to that second verse, I was like, I had to do something for my cousin Nikki. I love my cousin Nikki, and we grew up loving hip-hop together, and I remember going down there when it was 1994, and He was wearing a Wu-Tang shirt. So that's why I say when the second verse comes, I say, go up and throw a W like Wu-Tang Clan. Because I'm saying we're still driven. We're still winning. So the W is to represent the winning. But can't nobody rock a party like Dwayne can? Because what I did in my career was I networked. I was often the only Black person at the events. It didn't matter if it was in Toronto or in the south of France. But I learned that I didn't just have to rock the mic. I had to rock the negotiation skills and the networking skills. And that's what I'm talking about there.
That is so
there's a
important.
Lot of references in there too, which, you know, just rap references and
like Snoop Doggy Dogg, not Snoop Dogg, Snoop Doggy Dogg.
But that's and LL Cool J is in there. And...
Yeah, took two L's and came back. My mama said, "Knock you out."
Yeah, I was
stick and move.
Well, it's interesting. The song starts off with a chorus. So, and then ends off with a double chorus at the end.
Yeah, the double chorus, for sure.
And so it's like chorus, verse, and then double chorus at the end, which is interesting because there's always been talk about whether you should start off with a verse and then go into the chorus. But these days, it seems everyone wants to kind of hook people right off the top. So I'm not sure.
I don't always do that, but I just felt that it was so strong, the concept, that I wanted to do it. And then when I reached out to Jordan, like, I mean, I love the kid. We used to tour with Classified, and Jordan came out with his first recording. And so that was my baptism, I'd say, in the music business, because we go out to BC. I didn't know how big these guys are. All these Toronto rappers want to say, like, how big they are, but they can't pull a show. I go out there to Whistler, Classified, Jordan, killing it. We go out to Victoria, Vancouver Island, same thing. We go through Kelowna. Then we go to Alberta, to GP, Grand Prairie, and Fort McMurray, and Lethbridge, and Canmore. And these guys are doing it up every night. But I, at the hotel, I'd always stay with Jordan. So that's how we made our friendship. And then when I got him to do this song, the harmonies, I didn't know if he was just going to sing what I wrote, but I love how he just harmonized behind it. And there's something to be said about that Black soul singing. And he's just harmonizing and bringing it out over top, layering it and just thickening it up. And just love the guy for it, man. He's such a great person.
It's
I really like that kind of... soul samples or that kind of groove.
Exactly.
When rap got away from the 808 and that kind of almost rat-a-tat beat. I thought it really got great. And then it got then trap sort of took it back to that robot stuff a bit. But I love that kind of groove.
And I agree with you. The only thing I'd say is I think it's so important, and what COVID has done is it's taken us out from going out. For me, it was going to Atlanta and being in those clubs and hearing the music there. And that's when it clicked, because I didn't really like trap or anything like that. But when I was in the club and I heard it and I saw how people reacted emotionally, then I was like, okay, I get it now.
There's definite music.
Especially
that makes
down south, because they... Sorry, go ahead, Phil.
I'm just saying that it definitely makes, there are some songs or some music that when you hear it in a club, it makes all the difference. You know, it's just listening to it on your stereo isn't just going to be the same.
No, for sure. And that goes for any genre of music too. You know, like I'm really excited, guys. You know, at the end of the month, you know who I'm going to see?
Who?
Genesis.
Cool.
Oh, wow.
I think that's going to be a cool concert. I'm a big Phil Collins fan, and I just can't wait to see him light it up at Air Canada Center. It'll be my first concert in a couple of years.
Wow.
Yeah, he's having a hard time. He's really, really ill, right? He's not drumming. He can't hold the sticks anymore. He's
right. Yeah, I heard.
I think he's just sitting in a chair. I hope he's singing, but
And that's what you never know with these concerts. I know John Bon Jovi was just supposed to sing a couple of days ago, and then he just did a rapid test before he was going on, and then they had to cancel into Miami. So, wow. You know, what can you do? You know, what can you do?
Getting back to the song, though, I just wanted to mention the first line. You know, we talk about specificity, and the first line really is specific because it places you in a place and a time, and it really kind of it roots the song, and it kind of gives you an idea of where to go from.
Right. Know? Yeah.
And
for sure.
And that's such a strong line.
Thank you.
So sometimes we get specifics, you know, it can't be just like, you know, it was last Tuesday night or something like that. But, you know, it was definitely, and, you know, you're back watching Much and it was all a dream. It just, everyone has been there, which I thought was so great.
Well, I think a lot of people can relate to it. And I mean, for me, that's what it was. And if you grew up in the 80s, 90s, early 2000s, it was Much music. And especially being a Canadian kid, we didn't have all the radio stations. that was our access. We didn't, you know, this is before internet. We didn't have that, but it was coming home, watching Much Music, Rap City, get your VCR ready. What are they going to play? What five songs are they going to go with? And that was your introduction of, but not because hip hop, it's not just the music, right? You know, I was on an interview the other day and they said, what's the difference between rap and hip hop? And I said, rap is the music and hip hop is the culture. So it didn't matter where you were in Canada. You could watch that and you could learn about hip hop culture, whether it's New York, whether it's Public Enemy, whether it's KRS-One, or whether it's Western, West Coast hip hop. But you would see that. And then what we would do as Canadian kids is mimic it. And then we realized we couldn't just mimic. And I got to give a shout out to Ivan Berry as a pioneer for Canadian hip hop from the industry side, because he said, we got to start talking about Canadian culture in our hip hop. We got to big up like the CN Tower or this. And then, you know, Cardinale started doing that more and more. And then of course, Drake took it to another level. And it's so great that we are able to do that. But that's my influence, is that Much music and music videos when they meant something and they weren't just on YouTube.
One thing I wanted to ask you about, and it's something I realized in my early career was my weakness. I was never great at networking. I'm better at it now. But so can you give some tips on how to network effectively as a musician?
Yeah, well, I'll preface it by saying, like, I say it on the second verse. Can't nobody rock a party like Dwayne can. Put me at a function and watch me network. I'll be at it. It's a habit. We've been putting in work. I guess I learned it from when I was in university. And I was part of a fraternity. I never thought I'd be part of a fraternity, but I was. And I remember for the summer, we went to an event. And I was wearing a basketball jersey. And everybody said they wanted to talk to the elders from the fraternity for connections and to connect with them. And people would go up and they would talk to these elders and they'd say, what do you do? That was their intro line. And I would wear my basketball jersey and the elders would come up to me and say, like, what do you know about this basketball player? What do you know about Dominique Wilkins? I'd say, human highlight film. And I'd start talking to them about basketball. And then by the end of it, I'd be like, oh, man, so nice to meet you. And they'd say to me, like, what are you doing? What are you? And I was like, oh, nice to meet you. Like, I don't know. Like, what do you do? And they'd be like, well, I'm a president over here. I work at TSN or I do this. And the reason why I mentioned that is because I realized that the music business, it can be awkward to talk to people. And so sometimes I learned to talk about nothing about music, but to talk about everything else. And I remember what it was like to be in the south of France in Cannes. And you know what? You know who the guy who brought me out there, not brought me out there, but the reason why I went and the first person I saw was Chuck D. And I remember seeing him there and he said to this group, there was only about 50 people in this room, but I swear he was speaking to me. I know he wasn't just speaking to me, but he was like, this is going to be the future of the music business. you guys are artist entrepreneurs. It's not going to be about just having a manager and them doing it. You're going to go out and you're going to have to hustle. And so what that taught me right there was I'm going to have to do it. So what are my tips? My tips are to talk about anything but music, especially at the beginning. And once you get into just a conversational flow, especially if you're at a conference or just talking about other music, like if it's at a music conference, it's like, oh, have you seen any good acts around here? Or have you done this? But I always think it was about talking about not music. And then I guess the second thing is having a smile. Because even when I'm an introvert, so sometimes I'm shy, but when I put a smile on, or when you put a smile on, it makes it more inviting for more people to talk to you. So when you have that smile on, and then once you start talking to one person and you have a smile, and the third tip, the third and final one, is to listen to the other person. Because so many people are just so full of everything that they're doing. I'm doing this, I'm doing this. But if you listen to what the other person's saying, and it's not to help them per se, but just to hear them out, but then you might make a connection with that person. And that person might say, oh, you got to meet this person. And then all of a sudden, you just met another person. Now there's a group coming around here. And then next time you see that other person, they're like, oh, I like this guy. He was listening to me, basically, is what they're saying. And they introduce you to someone else. So, I think it's about not always just talking about music. I think it's about having a smile on your face. And I think it's about listening to other people.
This sounds a little bit predatory, but...
Sure. Yeah.
In my business, I have a CRM where I track... my leads and contacts, because that's sure. How you do business. You keep those contacts open, because after a while they say, hey, thanks for sending me the email, by the way, and then, they become your client. Did you track any of these people that you met, or in terms of like some kind of record that you knew these people, or?
Yeah, well, because I travel a lot, right? So I just got back from London, England, and Amsterdam. And my hack is that when I go on Facebook, for instance, if they're my friends on Facebook, I change my current city. I change where I live. So I'll change where I live to London, England. And the reason why I do that is because then I can find friends in my current city. Oh. So then I'll see all my friends in London and I'll just send them a message. Now I'm only in London for 3 days. So I'll say my show's on Monday, but I'm going to be hanging out on Saturday night around King's Cross. If you're around, I'd love to see you. And maybe they can't make it, but at least you're telling them where they can meet you, because places like London, they're so big. I can't go around and see that. And I do the same thing in Amsterdam, and I do the same thing in London, England. I do the same thing in New York. I always just pick one place that I'm going to be at. I tell people in advance, but I find out who's in the city, because when I do that, sometimes I don't realize, oh, this person moved over to New York. Oh, that's cool. And maybe I should see them. And then I find it's a great way to connect other people with other people, right? Because when they come and meet you, maybe you're in a conversation, but they're like, oh, are you here to see Dio? Oh yeah, I'm here to see Dio too. And then they're talking, and next thing you know, they've made connections too, right? So I think that's a really big key too.
That is some great stuff.
Hey, I got to tell you, I'm having a great time with you guys. You guys are really knowledgeable. I'm a fan of the podcast. I'll be promoting it even more, but this has been cool.
That is so great. And just definitely some great tips, because people, we have so many people who are working so hard to do something with their music, and you do have to work, and it is a people's business.
It is, right?
And it's, yeah, well, that was awesome. So what's coming up next for you, Mr. Gibson?
Well, what's coming out is I just released my book on this grind, Life Lessons Learned from the Music Business. So that's been a lot of fun to personally autograph copies for people, just shipping out a couple hundred copies in the next couple of days. And then I start my anti-bullying tour. So I'm going out and talking to the students about anti-bullying, gearing up for January, where I'll be going to the Grammys and putting on a big Grammy event, hosting Canadian talent, followed up by a Black History Month tour in February. So can't stop, won't stop, because I'm still dreaming and we still winning.
Excellent.
I'm tired.
Well, we got to have you back. So
I love it.
It looks like we'll have to find some time in your schedule. So sometime in the new year, I hope.
1,000%. Yeah, I can't wait for the new year because the world's getting back on its feet. And I think 2022 is going to be a big year for a lot of people, and I can't wait.
I think so. Well, I hear the band, and that means that's all the time we have on Song Talk Radio. Don't forget, we want to hear from you, so send us your comments on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at Song Talk Radio, or send us an email at feedback@songtalk.ca. If you're listening on the podcast stream, why not check out the YouTube channel for live performance videos and full episodes now that we're all on the videos. And if you're on YouTube, you should subscribe. Yeah, do it now.
You really should.
You should.
You should. Get on there, subscribe.
Subscribe today to the Song Talk Radio podcast on your favorite podcast provider. And don't forget to sign up for the free newsletter at songtalk.ca. You can find the links to all the books, products, and web services we mentioned, as well as Dwayne's book, here on the resources page at the site. And wherever you are in the world, why don't you join us online for the next Song Talk Meetup? It's free to join on
Song. I'll be hosting that one.
Ooh, you should still go. And it's free to join on meetup.com and free to attend the meetup. Stop by songtalk.ca for the link. And most of all, we'd like to thank you, the home listener. Mr. Gibson, how do people get more of you?
The best way to find me is at IMDO Gibson. IAMDOGIBSON. IMDO Gibson on Twitter, on Snapchat, on TikTok, on Instagram, or at www.imdogibson.com.
And how about you, Michael? Help people get more of you.
Let me see. Proudfoot420 on Instagram.
And, of course, you can get more of me at philemery.ca. Stop by the website at songtalk.ca to browse past shows and find out how you can be a guest. Stay safe, everyone, and keep on writing.
Oh, yeah!